What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it? Yes. Good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns.
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know that.
That's it. I'm done.
Well, and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tamara Ricky on the board. SP Futures up 7. NASDAQ Futures up 58. We have Professor Kevin.
Good morning.
How are you? I was just thinking, boy, if he gave you a 2% return, you'd give anything to the guy. Just saying.
He won't watch his kids, though.
No, he won't watch it. Nobody want to watch. Your kids were too loud. The guy played in the band.
Oh, yeah. Yes, he did.
That's what she wanted.
For those of you who have never raised a metalhead drummer, guess where... All through those high school years when you have the garage band, guess where they set up?
Well, you can move the guitar. It's hard to move the drums.
It is damn hard to move. Yeah, the guitar, you just unplug it, put it in the case, and go home.
Yeah. It's a different sort of program. But anyway,
my daughter was the good child. She played the violin for a while.
My nephew, Matt, works at PTI. His daughter is doing the violin thing too. Anyway, she's doing that. She always gets flustered when I say, "Do they let you touch the strings in the orchestra?" She just looks at me like, "What do you mean?" I said, "Well, if you're really bad, they just tell you act like you're playing and don't touch the strings." She said, "No, I get to touch the string." Okay. First of all, we got a million places to. I don't know where to start these days. What about the game last night? The good news, I guess, is the coach doesn't get his bonus, right?
That's true. The other interesting news is that the SEC is once again out in the SEC. The only wins the SEC got in the playoffs were against other SEC teams.
Oh, well, there you go.
They did not beat a team from another conference.
Well, it's pretty hard to imagine that this Miami team somehow couldn't make it into the the championship game with the likes of Duke and Virginia.
Yeah, that was bizarro. I mean, they had some bad losses, but that was just bizarro and a tiebreaker setup.
Well, speaking of tiebreaker, what did you think of the the NFC South? Where's Tampa? Tampa's in the NFC, right? Or are they in the AFC? They're in the NFC.
Yeah, let me see, how did it work? If the when the Falcons won, they created a three-way tie, all 8-9, so, you know, not exactly stellar records, but they created a three-way tie, and in the three-way tiebreaker, Carolina, the Panthers, won. If the Falcons had lost, then it would have been a two-way tie between Carolina and Tampa, and then Tampa would have won that.
If it was something about there were two teams, the tiebreaker was head-to-head, but if there are three teams, it was either record between the three or record in the division or something.
Yeah, it was record amongst the three, so it created a little mini carousel there. And head-to-head would have been, they've split, so that would have moved them to a second tiebreaker if it would have been just the two teams.
I think the second one was record in division.
Probably.
I don't know. Crazy stuff. So tonight, the coaches now from Ole Miss now move to LSU.
Right? At least some of them, yeah.
Interesting
to see who all goes.
The coach does not get a bonus for winning, even though he wasn't coaching. One of my mavens last night told me that the second string quarterback was already in the portal and couldn't play for Ole Miss. Is that true?
That's possible. I didn't check. But again, the schedule for the portal, you know, schools are starting their semesters now. If you're going to enroll in the spring semester, you got to go. You can't wait around for all of this.
This is I just happened to dig up yesterday, just because I get some kind of a sense of this, since I really don't know what the hell it's all about. I Googled like Notre Dame players in the portal, and they show up. They've got nobody apparently incoming, at least, because they got 15 people out. And
Nobody yet. They will have some people, but
what I'm saying is that the way they do it is that, you know, Kevin O'Neill's in the portal. There'll be a line, and if you're already snagged by someplace or committed, they'll be that school's insignia. And if not, it just is a big question mark in a circle. So it looks like about 10 of them have a question mark in a circle.
And no, some of them just put their names in last week. So, you know, they're going to do visits and all that kind of stuff.
All right, so...
I think most of those guys will land. I think there are people who won't land anywhere, but I think most of those guys will.
Okay, so it looks like Indiana's got at least one or two so far.
Yeah.
Now, my question is, just follow up on what you just said. I know this is total insanity for me to bring up the school issue, but then again, you brought it up, not me. People are going back to class next week. If you still got a question mark there and you're doing visits, what do you do? Come in 3 weeks late or something?
That's the problem. Now, you might be able to do that in some places, especially if you're in a playoff team. They might give you an accommodation on that. But late starts in classes are a pain in the neck. Now, you know, you may say some guys aren't going to take classes seriously, and that would be true. But you have to be enrolled, and you know there is a certain measure of stuff that says, you know, if you aren't enrolled for the start of the semester, then you're not enrolled.
Well, I guess that ups the next question is, if I all of a sudden apply to, you know, whoever, Southern Cal, Notre Dame, Michigan, and I apply a week late, can they let me in, or is there a hard, fast cutoff that everybody goes by?
Well, every school is going to have its rules, and every school is going to have its rules that it's willing to abuse on behalf of the athletics department. But generally, yeah, you can't. You know, if you're applying late, you're applying for the next semester.
Well, I'm grad school. I guess you can do whatever you want, right? Nobody cares if you go to class.
Grad school's got a little bit more flexibility, but even then, not that much.
I can't imagine the guys at the University of Chicago winging out a grade for somebody just because they were on the football team. But maybe it happens. I guess it happens. But we have the Venezuela situation. We've got the shooting. We've got the stock market. We've got gold. I sent everybody around this thing yesterday. And it's not really a question of... I think most people have a life. At least I hope they do. And they get their information from the news. And unfortunately, I think people have split off into either on one side of the news or the other. And don't do a whole hell of a lot of research themselves. I mean, kind of unfortunately. But I surely can understand it, because it takes time. And it just so happens, you know, that's really
I'm
my...
calling me Shirley.
Yeah, well, but I mean, that's essentially my job, for good or bad, is to watch all this stuff and manage people's money. They essentially pay me to go through this crap and watch this stuff, right? And have some talent when it comes to hedging portfolios and somewhat, which I think they get all the time, but the other stuff is kind of hard to do. And so you end up in here, and we have the stream of information coming out of Venezuela. And, you know, whether things are justified or what's going on behind the scenes, I don't know. But I will say this. I have sent this thing out to everybody, and I might as well get up the whole page. But the story is with Venezuela, at least one of the stories, is that the Chinese had the nerve to lend these guys a bunch of money.
That's had the nerve as an editorial comment. If you're reporting what happened, please.
Well, okay, but they essentially loan these people some money in return for oil and some sort of influence or something. Right?
Yeah.
And they were supposed to get paid back. They lent them $60 billion, and they were supposed to get paid back in oil and who knows what else they were signing, because they were down there, evidently. And the idea, it's been, these bastards had no right to do that. I mean, they didn't have any right to give these guys money to peddle influence, essentially, in our hemisphere. That's part of the thing, right? Well, okay, I'm looking at major holders of US, of Treasury securities. I've got China, $690 billion that they've loaned us. And we send them a check, I'm guessing, every year roughly $25 to $28 billion. We at least paid. The Venezuelans were skunking them on their oil. They were sending them like half as much, right? Right, Kevin? So
yeah, so there's a couple of dynamics in there. Obviously, we are very beholden to China for holding U.S. debt, and it would be great to unwind from that to some, you know, however we can. But if we're going to do that, let's just say we wanted to do it 100%. Let's just say we wanted to do it 50%. How long would it take to unwind from that? A really long time.
I think if they yanked $100 billion out of it, we got a problem.
Yeah. So, you know, we got issues there. We know that. We've talked about, you know, how the country in general, how corporations all too often have compromised themselves on behalf of China. And you know how I feel about that. I don't even like, you know, I won't even drink Coke products if I can avoid it.
Yeah.
And that's a whole long list of products besides Coca-Cola and other soft drinks.
By the way, do you even have a chart?
And I won't, because they sponsored they became an official sponsor of the Beijing Olympics, which to me was saying, I am an official sponsor of the showcase for the Chinese Communist Party. And to me, that's, you know, if you want to sell in China, I understand it. It's a big market, and you'd like access to the market. But do you really have to go as far as to say, I'm endorsing these people? I'm not on board with that. And so that's why I won't drink Coke products.
There's also a quarter million.
So you know how I feel about it.
There's also a quarter million students here from China paying, what, an average of $70,000 a year? That's a lot.
We can get into all the hypocrisies. You know, yeah. I can only deal with, on my own personal level, I can only deal with what I can control.
Well, I have a question for your personal level. Where the hell do you even find out all the stuff Coke owns? You have some huge list in your bathroom?
Oh, yeah. No, you can pull up a list of Coca-Cola products. They own things like Honest Tea. You know, I mean, there's a long list of it.
Don't they own a couple of waters and everything else?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Let's see. Not Aquafina. What's the one that they own?
Well, I think, doesn't Pepsi own Aquafina? Somebody does.
Yeah, I think Pepsi does.
So sure if you boycotted both of them, if you could walk out of the, you'd have to go to the tap for your water and everything else.
Well, my problem is not with Pepsi, so.
I'm saying, but if you did, they own pretty, which one of them, some one of them owns Dr. Pepper, right?
Pepsi owns Dr. Pepper.
Yeah, I mean, it is astounding how much all these places own. Somebody owns Gatorade. And somebody owns the other one, Powerade, and they're all owned by somebody, right? Plus, they own snacks and everything else. I have a curiosity now. Who do you think owns more? Probably. That's a good question. Who do you think owns more? Who do you think owns more, Coke or Pepsi?
Oh, probably Coke, but I can't swear to that.
Yeah, Coca-Cola has about like $90 billion more.
Well, popular soda brands, Fanta, Sprite, Schweppes, Fresca, Minute Maid, Simply Orange, Fairlife Milk. I don't know, they own a milk company. 8S, Energy, yeah. Powerade, Vitamin Water, Gold Peak. You know, I won't buy any Cold Peak anymore. I didn't know they owned.
Yeah, I mean, there you go. It's almost impossible to avoid. But as soon as I learn of it, and then I extend the boycott. Their water brand is Dasani.
All right. How come they're not in hydration? Maybe they are.
Well, yeah. If I were to go to a fast food place and order a meal with a drink. Then I tell them I want milk, because milk is more likely to be locally produced.
They own Fairlife Milk. I don't think I've ever had
so
that.
You can't win that game either. Give me some water. Give me a glass of water.
Dasani.
I don't go to fast food very much anyway, so it's,
Who's a smart water? Topo Chico and then Ciel. Who's C-I-E-L? Who the hell are they?
I have no idea.
If you ever try to do a cleanse here, don't do a. Ayataka is green tea. That's a global and niche brand. I don't think you're going to find either one of us in a global or niche brand.
How can you be globally niche?
I don't know. It's a
that seems like jumbo shrimp to me.
It sure does.
So you know, back on Venezuela, yeah. So they're getting stiffed And what's next, what's always next for China, because they do these deals all over the world, and, you know, they've done things like build airports and things like that in some third world countries, and they know they're going to get stiffed, and so what that allows them to do is go in and take over the operation. And that's exactly how they do it. Is it, okay, you're in arrears, I'll tell you what, let's settle out of this, we'll move in. And that's their MO for all of this kind of stuff. Now, it's, you know, as Russell has documented many times, their economy is struggling. At some point, that gets to be a real problem for them. You can't keep taking bites that you can't chew.
Is the playbook any different? And I'm not trying to self-flagellate here, but is the playbook any different than we've done, the Brits done? I mean, it seems like it's the colonization playbook.
It may or may not be, Tom. But if you don't want the Chinese and or the Russians setting up shop in this hemisphere, then that's going to be a problem for you.
Yeah, I'm just curious. I mean, I'm trying to match things together, and I think that's what you're supposed to have. I mean, I never tried to be a mayor or a governor or anything like that, but trying to keep yourself sort of focused and everything on the same page, which is what you talk about all the time out of all the people on the show, keeping some kind of focus in whatever you're trying to accomplish. I read this story last week, and I don't know if I had a chance to mention it to you on Wednesday. It had to do with these NVIDIA chips. And this whole thing with NVIDIA, every time I see the guy, every time I see some action going on there, it just, I don't know, hair seems to go up in the back of my neck. And somehow or another, I think the guy's the second coming of Harold Janine. But so they've got these high-end chips, all right? So we've been on again, off again, sending these chips to China, what, four times in the last 5 years, Kevin? Mm-hmm. So all of a sudden now we're banning these things from going to China. And then was it Hal or somebody in the show came in with a article about how NVIDIA is actually leasing the Chinese time on the chips here?
Oh yeah, that was me. I gave you that. Yeah, they just say, okay, so just come on and subscribe to one of our data centers that's running the same stuff, and then we haven't sold it to you.
Does all that stuff get back and forth? This might be a Carl question. Does all that stuff get the data back and forth to China? Is that all satellite now, or is that still undersea cable? I mean, I have no idea. Do you?
It's probably both. Carl's on. Hey, Carl, you know the answer to that?
He might be drinking his coffee.
But I
guess. So
I want to know what's in the coffee.
So the latest is, because we banned these guys from shipping these chips over. So one of the listeners sends me this article, and I'm reading this thing. Kevin, I could have sworn I got the thing from some guy in outer space. Of course, we got some guys. We're always going to have some guys, right? I believe down in Texas that decide they're going to buy these chips, all right, with the full intent of sending them over to China because they want them. And, of course, they're going to wet their beak, put a little premium on them, right? Well, you know, this is America, right? People do that kind of stuff really everywhere, not just in America. So they have some massive sting operation on these guys. I don't know if it was the Texas police or the Department of Justice. They got their eye on these dudes. So just about the exact same day they're going to pull a trap and arrest all of them, the government, the administration changes the policy and says, nah, you guys could buy this stuff anyway. I'm reading this, I'm going, if I wrote this in a book and called it fiction, I would not sell a copy, would I?
I think if you're looking for consistency and a lack of hypocrisy, well, good luck with that. Go ahead, Carl.
Just in case you're interested, there's might be a shot of whiskey in that
all right.
This morning.
This Canadian whiskey?
Yesterday, I'm thinking a shot of whiskey in my coffee might be pretty good.
No, we're thinking scotch. You know, I don't drink cheap booze. It's not, life's too short for that.
All right.
But quite seriously, with this whole NVIDIA thing is utterly hilarious, okay, in the breathtaking scale of legal violations across the board and the way that they continually come up with another one, and yet nobody stomps on them, because if you do, the market crashes. And we're not talking about down a little either. Yeah. All right. I mean, at the valuations that we have right now, you're talking about a crash. So, you know, I mean, you know, Chief, we've talked about this, you know, how many times, right? I mean, you know, now it's spread out to all the memory makers, you know, Micron, you got SanDisk that skyrocketed the other day over the same thing. You've got, and by the way, that stuff is real. If you take a look at builder sites where people go, I build my own PCs. I don't buy them off the shelf, okay? I have, since I ran MCS, it was the only sane way to do it from a cost point of view, and I know how to put them together, so it's not hard.
So what do you do? Have to buy all the software and inject all that in there, or what?
Well, no. I run on the stuff that matters, like the, you know, the blog and the stuff that I have that runs at the house that's in the back end, on the back end. Okay, kind of like an exchange. You have the terminal, right, and then you have the stuff that actually makes the difference. which is stuff on the back. The stuff on the back end cannot crash. Windows can crash on your desk. The stuff on the back end, you know, if it has to have 5 nines uptime. That's just the way it is. Right? So it cannot crash. But those machines run well. My stuff anyway runs FreeBSD. Other people like Linux. I like a different flavor. But the thing is that all those are built from components. So if you go on the sites that actually supply that stuff, for example, Newegg is one of the better known ones. The cost of DDR5 memory, which is in every single machine that's made today that has a current processor and a, you know, current board and all that, it's more than doubled in the last 2 months.
Well, why? Just...
Because these guys, Anthropic and some of these other guys, okay, now this is wildly illegal behavior. It's felony level illegal, but they're doing it anyway because nobody steps on anyone anymore. They have turned around and they haven't just bought up all the supply. They've bought the wafer commitments, the actual pieces that come out of the fabs that aren't chips yet, okay? They've bought that on a forward basis going out 3, 4, 5 years.
Are these descendants of the Hunt brothers?
This is exactly that sort of crap, Kevin. It is precisely an attempt to deliberately corner the market and constrain supply to screw competitors.
This is like filling up all the warehouses where the soybean has to be delivered.
It's and by the way, you're not going to be able to consume those soybeans unless there is electrical power available that won't exist for the next 25 years.
I don't think our Justice Department is up for this.
Well, you know what? Our Justice Department ought to be out there with about, a couple hundred pairs of handcuffs. Or maybe, since we don't seem to care about law anymore, let's just get straight to the garrots and the gibbets and the hell with the trials. I'm really getting to the point that I'm like, you know what? If you're going to do this, because when you think about this, Chief, all right, people like myself, I smelled this coming, and I wanted a better graphics board for my machine on my desk because I process videos, I do my podcasts and things like this. The other one's sitting in a box in my equipment closet. Still works, but I bought the new one because it's about 2 to 3 times as fast as the old one. And I generation skip. So, and that's just because there's no value in buying each new model as it comes out, all right? I mean, it's just the way it's been now in the PC world for the last, 10, 15 years. But I smelled this possibility coming. Normally what happens is something gets introduced, it's expensive. 6 months, a year later, it's down by 20-30%. Chief, you've seen this in every piece of technology ever, right? I mean, televisions, whatever, this is the way it is. All right, I smelled this, the incipient parts of this, so I bought the board on Black Friday. If I wanted that board today, it's 50% more expensive. And it's not, and the only reason it's 50% more expensive is because NVIDIA has made the decision to deliberately attempt to freeze out other people in this market. Now, that is a crime.
I'm telling you, I think the guy at NVIDIA is... But he's not alone. I mean,
I know he's not. I'm not. Hey, listen, I'm not saying he's the only guy doing it.
How would you even bring, when we haven't done this, you know?
See, if you just frog march people, these are not civil offenses. But
this constant debate we have, who's you? I mean, my point, since we've had a the Reagan era, and maybe went before him, we decided all mergers are good mergers. I don't know if they're getting, if he was getting paid or what the deal was, but we there hasn't been anybody in his whole 8 years. They didn't prosecute one antitrust case, and it's been kind of going on since. How all of a sudden, I don't know how you start tomorrow. You and I and Kevin and obviously Lou and we even know what these acts are and what you're not supposed to do. Find somebody 35 years old that even has a clue that it's wrong. He's never seen any light other than this.
Chief, the reality of it is that, it as I've pointed out many times, if you're a homeless person in Chicago and you're trying to stay alive by being on the lower level of the loop, okay, in February.
Yeah.
Right, which by the way, is exactly why they're down there, right? Because the air exhaust from the buildings are down there. And instead of being 20 below zero, it's 40 degrees.
Yeah.
All right. I mean, been there, done that. The exit from my garage used to be down there from 2 Pro. If you're that guy and you get arrested and thrown in jail, that actually might be an upgrade in your standard of living.
It's almost reached the point where if I was a policeman and I went home tonight in my squad car and I pulled over a biker for going through a stop sign, he'd look at me like I had five heads.
Well, yeah, but the thing is this. If you marched into invidious corporate offices or rush the hospital system up there, okay, or any of those other guys, marched in there, Here's a pair of silver bracelets. Guess what? Your ass is going in the back.
You could do that. I want to get to the same place, but I think...
Well, your butt's going in the back of the car.
I think you would have to have either an attorney general or a president or a vice president or somebody has to get on.
Well, you'd have to have...
You got to get on the air on a Saturday morning for about...
Well, you have to have an indictment, but...
You need to get on the air on a Saturday morning for maybe half hour, an hour on one topic and say, look, this is something I want to do in my administration, and by the way, we're going to do it. And these are the three pieces of paper, one the Sherman Act, one the Clayton Act, one the Robinson, that we're gonna start to enforce. Now, I know a lot of you people don't even know what these are, but I'll tell you what I'll do. Have your general counsel send an email to this site, and we'll send them a copy of all these things, and you got 6 months to either divest yourself of some place you shouldn't have bought in the first place, or if you have some kind of a tying agreement with somebody, you better get rid of it because you were giving you 6 months to straighten this out, or we're coming after you.
Chief.
But I mean, you have to. I'm saying it's so far gone, Carl. You almost
got
to get noticed.
No, do you know why that never works? All right. What have you
Let's
seen?
Put that, I would feel better about it. That's
I don't care if you feel better about it. I'm trying to fix it, okay?
Okay, but I'm saying to walk into NVIDIA tomorrow, put handcuffs on the guy because he bought a company 2 weeks ago with the incredible intention of the restraint of trade, he'd look at you like, what are you talking about?
Who cares?
Well, okay.
I you know what? Here's the thing.
Kevin, be the referee here, will you?
Go ahead.
I'm going to be the referee. Okay, so... I don't have a problem with some with a notice period that doesn't offend me terribly, but when you say he'll look at you like he doesn't know, all of these people, especially you've got people with master's degrees in business that are involved in here and stuff, they all know. They all took business law. Hell, in community college I cover this in business law, so they know, and their attorneys know. And so, they're just flaunting it. They know it and they're flaunting it. And for that reason, I would have a hard time feeling sorry for him if we did take the approach, if we were to take the approach of walking in and putting the cuffs on him right now.
Well, I mean, I just...
The problem with threatening it, Chief, is number one, it never happens.
I'm not into threatening. What I'm saying is when you let something go so long, I mean, all the people that brought their companies overseas and didn't pay any taxes... To go put cuffs on the last guy, he'd say, why me? What are you doing?
Because time's up and too bad, and you're the example, and you're going to jail.
Well, I think the example stuff never works.
Well, you're right. The first time it doesn't, okay? And you know what? And the headlines would be all over MSDNC. This guy did this because that SOB is a Democrat.
Well, how
okay? And so you know what? Well, so then the next day...
Well, let's turn the question around here. Let's turn the question around. Do you think any of the last five Justice Departments are set up to do this, both mentally and people-wise?
Oh, they absolutely have the internal capacity to do it. There's no question about that at all.
You think so?
The whole reason they don't do it is because they know exactly what happens if they do.
Well, maybe the market goes down and the donations stop.
Well, okay. I mean, if you do this, and you actually throw the NVIDIA chairman in jail. All right, this is a U.S. corporation that's traded on U.S. exchange. You throw his butt in jail. All right. Yeah. Okay. He'll bond out. Whatever. But he does. You know. And you do him on a Friday. You know, Friday at 10 o'clock at night. So he's got to wait till Monday morning because you know you got that 72 hours to get him in front of a judge for arraignment.
I don't think he bonds anymore. But anyway, it's.
Well, no. You arrest him and you throw him in jail. And okay, it's 72 hours. You got to arraign him. That's that's due process. That's the way it works. Guess what? He spends the 2 nights in jail. And so, you know, he ain't going to like that very much. You know, he was going to jet over to Paris and, you know, and have some nice lunch or whatever.
I will say this, agreeing with Stacks and Jack's guess. Kevin, help me here. I mean, I'm going to say that if you went back, and Carol, maybe you could do this. One of you guys could do this better than me. If you went back 30 years and looked at all of the places that Microsoft took over and put out of business.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, how do you even... Let's talk about WordPerfect. Let's talk about I mean, for God's sake. I mean, how do you even at this point say, boy, you shouldn't have been doing that for 30 years?
Well, it's at one point, do remember that the Just Us department allegedly went after Microsoft, and that was because they were trying to put all the other browser companies out of business.
Yeah.
And one of the ways that they were doing it was not just including their own in the software, which is bad enough, but they were blackballing the other guys.
Do you guys remember that when that happened? And this was I don't think I was doing Stacks and Jacks here. But I think I was on with Dr. J on the score. Bill Gates was, I don't know, love him or hate him or whatever. Right? He was of the opinion. Essentially, you didn't have to be constantly paying off governments. No. And all of a sudden, this came down on him, what you're talking about. Kevin, help me here with your memory. And somewhere along the line, somebody got hair up their behind about how he wasn't, quote, playing the game, and how his lobbying effort was way less than any other business of his size, and how he really better get his ass together and start doing all that stuff, because how important it was to make sure something like this never happened. And they did up their lobbying game dramatically after that. I'm sitting there going, people are actually saying this on TV, that if you don't pay off these people, your company's in danger and you better start doing it. And nobody had a problem with it. I'm sitting there ready to shoot somebody when I hear that on TV. And yet, nobody else seemed to care.
Chief, this is everywhere, okay? And it's, one of the things that this is what happens when you go from a high-trust society to a low-trust society, all right? And I put up a column a couple of days ago about this. I've gotten increasingly of the opinion that maybe the only friend I've gotten on the planet is my cat. If you lie to me in a business context, and not making a mistake, people make errors all, we're all human, we commit errors all the time. The definition of a lie is something that you tell me that you know is false, you do it to screw me for your, whether it's a pecuniary benefit or whether it's just to assuage whatever kind of crazy mental crap you've got going on in your head. Okay, that doesn't make any difference. The point is, it's material. It's not, it's not a white lie. It's not, Santa Claus comes down the chimney to your kid, right? Because there's no harm on the, on that. But it has those aspects of it. From that point onward, we're not doing business on a handshake level. And if you were my friend, you're not my friend anymore. And that's the end of the conversation. And the only way it changes from that point forward is if you apologize. You admit you did it, and you apologize. Now, if there's no financial harm, you don't have to make restitution because there's nothing to restitute. But the problem is, where we are today, is that my assumption, if I engage in any kind of a business agreement with you or anybody else, is that you're going to do that. You're going to screw me. And as a result, there is no shake your hand and make a deal. Ever.
Well, how about we...
And what that means, and this is, you know, an old complaint I've had for a long time, and this relates to whether it's taxes, whether it's, you know, it's all kinds of things. What we do is it's not good for the economy, and it's not good for the economy because what we're really doing is we're diverting expertise away from, you know, basically operations, you know, from doing things, from making things, from delivering services, and we're saying the real money in the world is in the legal realm.
Which it is, unfortunately. Yeah,
which it is, and that's not productive. So, it's also when we start to say, you know what would happen, we know what would happen to the economy, we'd get the shock, just like if we went to a very simplified tax system. We'd get the shock because a lot of people would be out of there. If we fixed healthcare properly, we'd get the shock because a lot of people would be out of work. But you know what? We'd get back to productivity.
We would.
And it would hurt for a while. It would hurt for quite a while. And maybe I'm just impatient because I'm old and would like to see it before I die. I would like to see my kids be able to live in that, you know, in a better economic world. But I'm increasingly in the camp of just saying, you know, let's go. Let's just take this down. I know it's not going to happen. I know it's a dream world.
I got a question for you, Kevin.
That doesn't stop me from feeling that way.
I got a question for you along those same lines. It has to do with Dub Bears tomorrow night. And the fact that they're on Prime. By a strict reading of an antitrust law, I shouldn't have to buy membership at Amazon to watch a football game. Should I?
No, think about that for a minute.
I mean, what if Amazon...
Let's say you wanted to watch some other Amazon original programming. Should you have to buy a subscription to Prime to watch it?
If it's a kind of an original, that's what I'm asking. Right? But, you know, I'm going to say Amazon seems to be able to do whatever they damn well please for a lot of years, taxes and everything else. But what if the three of us ran Costco? We said, I know how we get a jolt in our Costco memberships. Let's buy the Super Bowl game. And in order to watch it, you got to become a Costco member. I'm going to say that's against the Robinson-Patman Act, but I don't know. Is it?
Well, Robinson-Patman doesn't deal with services at all.
Well, I mean, but what's the part about the stringing where you can't charge for one to get the other
Yeah, you're talking about a tying agreement or using your monopolistic position in one area to exert influence in another. And I'm not sure that this qualifies.
No, Tide Sales is Sherman and Clayton.
Okay, but I'm saying, people would say that'd be pretty horrible, but isn't that the same thing that Prime's doing?
Well, realize something, Chief. We used to prosecute this, okay? IBM got their teeth kicked in for trying to do this to Amdahl.
Well,
I understand that, but Amdahl had a processor, had a mainframe that could run IBM's VM, all right, which was their operating system. And IBM turned around and said, if you don't buy our service contract, by the way, we won't we will not write a service contract on hardware we didn't build. Okay, you can't have a VM license.
Wow. How long did it take for that to shake its way?
They got sued.
Was it VM or was it VSE? You know, DOS VSE and
I don't remember if it was VM.
I think it was MVS.
It might have been MVS, but it was you know, it was their operating system of the time.
Yeah.
Okay. And that was a separately licensed product, and they said if you don't, you know, if you're trying to run it on hardware that isn't ours, F you.
Yeah. And it was not a product that they could claim was exclusive to the hardware and tied to the hardware. They couldn't bundle it in because they had multiple operating systems for the same hardware. So
that's right.
That kind of put them in a bad spot.
Well, yeah. I mean, but this was, you know, and so we had, you know, there was a period of time when the VAX came out that DEC tried to do this with disk drives. You couldn't buy a disk from them, from someone other than them. Okay. They, of course, priced them at three times what the disk actually cost. Yeah. Go figure, right? I, at the time, MCS, before it was an internet company, we did PC and mini computer maintenance and upgrades and repairs and things like, and, you know, data cabling for terminals and stuff like this. And we figured out how to get around that problem.
You guys were the Geek Squad?
We were basically in Chicago. We were the guys that were doing that stuff. We found second sources for memory boards that went in those microvaxes, and we also figured out how to get the disks to initialize and work. We wrote our own on-site warranty on them if something went wrong with them. So and we were there in 2 hours typically, where, you know, DEC was claiming, you know, 4-hour on-site response. Well, guess what? We're half their price, and you know, you can call us. We're 10 minutes away. Their office is downtown. Okay. And we sold a hell of a lot of that stuff. But if DEC could have, I mean, for a while, when those machines first came out, they attempted to prevent that from working. They failed at it, but they tried. And that was the same sort of thing happened with HP and their laser jets. You couldn't get the parts. They wouldn't sell them to you.
Yeah, and the third party stuff was they you know, it voided your warranty is what they told you.
Yeah, well, they did the same thing with the Vaxes, and of course, you know, anybody that had a brain in their head said, well, wait a minute, you're a third of the price.
Well, I think in my reading of, well, it's been a long time since I went through these laws. God, it was at Notre Dame, for God's sake. I think that if somebody were to buy access to the game from the NFL and charge you to watch the game, just like if we came up with the Sopranos again, we could charge HBO, or we could charge that kind of thing. I think getting you to do something else, to buy something, a third thing, I think probably is not kosher.
Well, the law says that a unwanted tied item that's a forced purchase is illegal.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
That is black letter Sherman Clayton stuff.
But what happens if Kevin? I don't know if you have, but I know a lot of people gamble a lot. What if we bought the full NFL package at the beginning of the year? How do we get screwed out of playoff games when we have the whole package?
That's an interesting question, and I'd have to read the agreement and see what it says.
You think? I bet most people. I think if I would have bought the NFL package, again, never assume, right? You make an ass out of yourself and everything. I don't think I would have read it all the way through and found out I couldn't get screwed. I mean, I think if I had the
information. Well, nobody reads it. They just click I accept and go.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think if I bought, what's the station the Cubs are on, Marquee. And I bought Major League Baseball, that I might be foolish enough to think I'm getting all the games. But,
well, silly you.
Silly you, yeah. Boy. Anyway, so how big of a... Evidently, there's... You know, in Chicago, I guess it's going to be on. Now, are you going to be able to watch it? Or you got to...
I happen to have Prime, so, yes, I will be able to watch it.
But evidently the...
Otherwise, I'd be parking my ass in your couch.
Well, that'd be fine. Well, otherwise, the snipes are grousing around the rest of the country, from what I understand. They're not happy.
Well, you wouldn't believe the Packers following either around the country. I don't know if you know this. When Bob Gold and I used to take a Notre Dame road trip every year, the Bears and the Packers were playing the Saturday after the Notre Dame played Tennessee. So we went to Knoxville. We flew in and out of Nashville, so we had a little bit of a drive, to get back over to the airport on Sunday. But we planned to be near the airport so that we could catch our flight out later in the afternoon, and we would watch the Bears and the Packers play in Nashville. So Bob went and he started looking for where can I go watch the Bears? You know, where is Bears viewing? And the answer was that they really didn't have anything listed. So he went on GreenBayPackers.com, and they have a listing of places to watch the Packers with groups of Packers fans all over the country. And so we went in this place and figured, you know, we're going to go in this bar in Nashville, and we're going to walk in, and they're going to direct us to that room back there where the Packers fans are hanging out. We walked in, and the whole damn place is everybody's wearing green. They're doing raffles. This place is built around the Green Bay Packers, and it's in Nashville.
Wow.
So I would think, you know, Bears Nation is probably not real happy about this arrangement for Saturday night, but the Packers fans are probably going.
So what does a bar have to do to get it? Do we have any idea?
Oh, they I'm sure there's a commercial subscription to it.
There is, and it's stupid expensive.
Really?
Yeah, it's the way those systems work, because they're direct fed, okay, whether it's on direct TV or whether it's on cable, or, you know, some kind of internet feed, is that your license cost is based upon the number of seats you're licensed to have in, you know, from the fire inspector in the building.
Okay, now, but it's going to be on locally, right? So,
You're going to get it on your local Fox channel.
Now, the Triple E Tap, since they're a Boston bar, actually they're becoming kind of an Indiana bar too, which is nice. Well, that's a nice crowd, that Indiana crowd. But anyway,
yeah, for now, give them a little time. They'll think they invented football.
Well, but now he gets the Northeast feed, and whatever, if he's on DirecTV, where the hell he's on. But now, are they going to block? Do they block the local? Say it was the Patriots. The Patriots are going to be on locally. Now, is he going to get, because he has the Northeast feed, does he get the Patriots on the local channel, or do they block that from him, you think?
I'd have to see what they're using.
I don't know off the top of my
head. But they used to, I was in there one night. I'm not really big on the Bruins, but the Bruins are playing somebody in the playoff, and this lady's standing next to me, and I'm sitting there going, she doesn't look like your normal person hanging around on the bar. It turns out she was some big executive VP from some huge company. She was a Boston fan, and she looked up Boston bars, saw the Triple E, and took a cab over, and she's sitting there next to me talking to me. She goes, oh yeah, this is great. I found a game. They didn't have it on in the hotel. Here I am. I'm like, okay.
Yeah, well, and you know, normally probably a lot of what Triple E has, I remember from my days subscribing to DirecTV, because that goes way back to when I lived in Wisconsin, and I just was not going to stand for watching only the Packers on NFL channels. So I wanted to get, you know, other programming, and DirecTV was the only ones that had the NFL package in those days. So, you know, you would get things like the Northeast Sports Network, those kinds of things. They were the equivalent of the Chicago Sports Channel.
That's what Nick so is. That, he gets a bean pot and all that stuff.
That may be a lot of where Triple E is getting their Boston programming.
It is, because you watch the Bruins, you're getting the home feed, not the National Hockey League feed.
Yeah, so it's just like getting the Bulls or the Blackhawks on the Chicagoland Sports Network.
Yeah, sort of the same thing. It's funny, the Boston crowd, I could take a shot at them, but that's an unusual crowd. If the team's not doing well, they don't show up, and then when they do show up, they're on every play and screaming at every basket. But and like, if you really cared that much, you'd have been here the last 6 weeks. But now this year they're having a huge year because of the Patriots, obviously.
You're saying a bunch of front runners, huh?
Oh, they're talking about Good Time Charlie's. and every one of them's a general manager, and every one of them's a quarterback. I mean, or an offensive coordinator. It's an interesting group. The Indiana crowd is much quieter. I'll just say that. But yeah, all these questions.
I bet you you get the Indiana crowd on basketball, though, you'll get a different story.
They haven't surfaced for basketball yet.
Okay.
They started to get a little Boston College crowd, but now they're so bad in football and that stopped.
Yeah, where Boston College hockey you'll get. Yeah.
So if the portals and all the other stuff we keep talking about, Kevin, is this, what is the separation? Is this year, how much more of the, I'll say that they have separated from the have-nots. Where do you think it's heading? Carl Pylon as well.
Yeah, you know, think about it. I think you will see the major conferences are going to find their own way to be that. But I don't know what the major conferences mean anymore. Does that include the ACC? I suppose it will if Miami wins the championship. But
that'll be something. The national champion couldn't win their own conference or even make the playoffs.
No, couldn't even get in their conference champion game. But that would have been true of many of the SEC teams as well. And don't even get me started on this, because, you know, it really, that whole Notre Dame-Miami thing, you know, I think that was so contrived, and it was driven by the selection committee commissioner, who happens to be an athletic director at an ACC school. If you make it Miami and Notre Dame, then you don't have to argue for or against the five the fourth and fifth place SEC team, and both Miami and Notre Dame are better than the number four and the number five SEC team always were, and may even be better than one, two, or three in some cases. So, anyway, I digress. It just pisses me off.
Still. I was with my buddy Bill. I won't say the last name, but he's a huge advocate of Marquette. So I had a long conversation with him regarding, you know, Marquette does not have a football team. Actually, Bill was recruited to Marquette to play football, Kevin. In his sophomore year, they disbanded the team.
Yep.
And because he was also a boxer, they said, well, you can retain your scholarship if you – used to have intercollegiate boxing in those days if you box for us. So he retained his scholarship and boxed for 3 years after. But he was really bummed on the football team because he played as a star at Mendel. And anyway – They're kind of in this no man's land. They're kind of sort of asking people for money, but not really think they're all in. And the whole Big East now, if you take away UConn and maybe St. John's, they're not. Where are they? Are they even middle of the road?
I think they're still considered a major conference for basketball purposes.
I know. But my point is, the question I'm trying to get to very clumsily, as usual, is last year. 2 years ago, they were ranked the top 10. Okay, well, now they're not even close. When they lose somebody and they haven't picked anybody up or didn't from the portal, I think they might have this year. What happens to a conference that's halfway in? It's almost, is my constant thing I bore people with in the Boardwalk Empire. You can't be half a gangster, Nucky. Can somebody stay in the middle here, or is it going to drop down to Division II or whatever you want to call it now? And in the top 50, they're paying people an arm and a leg. Can you be in the middle? I don't know.
Yeah, I think football will be separate. Basketball will figure out. I don't know how basketball is going to shake out. I think football will be separate. It will be the major schools. They will make their own rules. I don't think it's going to happen next year or the year after, but I think you're going to see it, and they'll probably split into, if it's 40 teams, they'll probably have four divisions of 10. If it's 64 teams, then it'll be, something else, but the numbers will be a little bit different. But you're going to see that because they're going to want to do their own regulation. They're not going to want to be subject to any NCAA constraints anyway. And as we've discussed before, it really is about, how are you splitting up the rent, splitting up the money. That's really what it's about. And when you talk about the playoffs, they have to keep themselves out of court. So because they lose every time. So you can't all be Division I. You can't say everybody's in the same division and yet these five conferences don't get access to the playoffs. So that's how we got, Tulane in there, and that's how we got who was the other one? James Madison. There's always one. This year was unusual because it was two, but because it's the five highest rated champions get in. So that's their workaround, is by saying, hey, any of you could be one of the five highest rated champions. So it could be all five. None of them are the SEC or the Big Ten or any of that. It theoretically could be that, but. Of course, as a practical matter, it isn't that way.
Are you anticipating?
So there's a whole lot of stuff that hasn't passed muster in the courts, and the only way around it is to say, "Well, we ain't playing with those guys anymore."
Are you going to say? I almost, if you look far enough ahead to maybe, who knows how long, many lifetimes, but I think you might end up with schools with two teams.
One is conceivable.
I mean, the Notre Dame could have their professional sponsored team that they want. And again, guys like us might have a team and we go play John Carroll and University of Chicago and Augustana people.
That could be. Don't know how it's going to shake, how it's 100% how it's going to shake out, but I do believe that we will see some different construct, and you're probably looking, 5 to 10 years out before it's all settled.
Well, the other question, I guess,
They're going to expand the playoffs. There's going to be 16 teams in it. Then they'll see how that works. Nobody's going to like it, and then they're going to try something else. And they're just, they're just sort of trying to make it up as they go along, which is sort of typical of college sports.
Well, it's I guess the next question is, well, looking ahead, which is what we do in Stacks and Jacks. If it keeps going down this road, Kevin, I think we're 10 years away from a total separation from the school. I don't see how you, if all of a sudden everybody lets private equity buy the Notre Dame, Arizona, Southern Cal team, you're gonna lose your tax thing. Now, do the board of directors then say, well, you're not us anymore, you're not using our stadium? If you're another pro league, a minor pro league, then that's what you are. And I mean, a student here happens to play for the South Bend Bears or somebody or other. I mean,
yeah. So there's a bit of a conundrum there, and yes, the NFL is part of the problem in that they are not sinking any money into development of players. They're just letting the colleges do it for them for free. So that's a factor in how things will shake out. That's a factor in how things operate today. But one of the benefits and one of the reasons that the colleges, that, you know, college football in general likes having the current setup is it sells. It's not just that, it's not just that it's the South Bend Bears or something like that. It's Notre Dame. You have an alumni base. State University, you have a whole in-state loyalty. Whether you think it should be significant or not, it is. And so it's, you know, part of the marketing of the sport is tied around it being State U or you know, your alumni base and so on. Just think of how they fill up the stadium at Notre Dame. It used to be day trippers. It's not anymore. But you get alumni who make, you know, and there's plenty of them who are willing to make the pilgrimage once a year, spread out over a bunch of games. And so they plan a trip, you know, they way in advance, they make sure they get the tickets, so they're willing to pay full price on the tickets rather than wait to see what the market has, because you don't want to book a hotel for 3 days, book a flight, do all that kind of stuff until you, without knowing you're going to have a ticket. And so if it turns out to be the biggest game of the year, then you won't have a ticket, and you don't want to get stuck with that. So they build this whole experience around it that is way more than just, you know, I'm going up and I'm going to a South Bend Bears game. And
where could you lose that? I mean, they're trying by making, you know, night games in November and not let you.
Oh
know.
Yeah, they don't. They're sabotaging themselves. They don't realize it sometimes, but yeah, they're sabotaging themselves because, like any business, when you only worry about what your next quarter is going to look like, what your next year is going to look like, and you have no look to the future, then you're, sooner or later, that's going to catch up to you, and you aren't going to have a viable business.
Yeah, but I'm wondering if at some point where everybody has a massive ego. I mean, if you go back when you and
except
I
except me and you.
Well, when you and I were Utes, when I say everybody was doing well for a while, You couldn't touch boxing in this country. It was by far, you know, the most popular sport. It was on, what, how many times a week?
Yeah, but Saturday Night Fights was a big deal.
And it was way bigger than the NFL. I'm close. And so was bowling, for God's sake. Well, all of a sudden, boxing...
Bowling was a little bit different, but yes, weekend bowling in the morning was a big deal, partly because the production cost was so low.
Well,
so lots of people bowled, and everybody could relate to it, but by the same token, the networks loved it because it was really, really cheap to produce.
I get all that, but what I'm saying is, you think you're on cloud nine, you can never get knocked off, and all of a sudden boxing, that a couple people die, right, and all of a sudden the betting angle and the gangsters involved in it, it disappeared so fast. I mean,
corruption had a lot to do with it as well. And do we think betting in sports is a problem?
Yeah, I mean, corruption
can ruin a lot of stuff.
I mean, I just wonder when the thing you have with a college like Notre Dame is you're pouring out what 3,000 new fans a year that are willing to do this like for a while.
Yep.
And to be perfectly blunt, I mean, I love the fact that it's a way for us to stay together and talk. And I'm sure if it was Alabama, we'd be the same way. You know, I think we're smart enough to know whether they win or lose really doesn't affect our life, unless, of course, we have money on them. But it's nice to have. It's an excuse to get together. right?
Yeah, it's a bonding experience, part of the experience, and plus we all went to the games when we were in school, so you know it's part of the nostalgia trip too.
Well, I went to my 50th reunion, and I'm sitting, you know, from the next table from Dave Casper, who had trouble getting out of the chair, and Dave was in one of my economics classes. There was a kind of people actually were students. And, you know, you knew these guys. They weren't, you know, your best friends. I mean, some people were. In our dorm, there weren't any football players, but I'd consider a few of the hockey players some of my better friends. They just happened to be there.
I do remember a finance professor saying he had seen a certain football player more in Sports Illustrated that fall than in class.
But, I mean, you wonder, now it's becoming pro sports. Now, are you going to leave the college digs behind or not? Tax-wise, I think you're going to have to somewhere. I don't see how a donation to to the Notre Dame football that's 20% owned by BlackRock is tax deductible. I don't see where that comes from. You know, it may take years for that to happen, but I mean, there's no common sense to it, is there?
No. Sorry, we don't do common sense.
No, we don't do common sense. Anyway, you sound good. You sound real good.
Yeah, I'm feeling pretty good. You know, a little bit of discomfort in the throat, but that's what happens when they take a laser to your throat. Yeah. I always think when I say laser, I think of Dr. Evil going, a laser. it didn't kill my voice. I'm doing all right, and I'll be back in 2 months to do it again.
Well, that's cool. Did you have to be put out or no?
Yeah, well, I was out.
All right. Well,
in fact, I was telling my daughter, because you know, Amy is my responsible adult. You know, you have to show up with a responsible adult. God, Amy, are you okay with being responsible adult? She's laughing. I was telling her the last thing I remember is the doctor saying, "Are you feeling drowsy yet?" And saying, "Not yet." And it probably didn't take me but 5 more seconds to be out.
Doesn't take long. If you're not out that long, it's not so bad. If you're out longer, boy, it takes a toll.
It wasn't bad, and obviously, you know, well worth doing. You know, just to not be too cryptic for the listeners, and I don't mind saying it, they found some precancerous lesions in my throat. So we're burning them away. It's an early catch, and I'm grateful for that. And the other stuff that I had going on all last year, we never would have discovered this if it weren't for that. So I guess whatever misery I had going on for 2025 has wound up being a bit of a blessing.
Well, if I remember the real Dr. J, Dr. Nigerian, who was the liver and transplant and all that other stuff, remember him telling me one night, "Hey, Tommy, I'm never going to kill you. That anesthesiologist, he just might."
He goes,
"I know I'm not going to kill you, but I always got my eye on that guy." Anyway, Kevin, you can hang on. We'll bring Carl in, and Carl, where do we want to go? Our labor numbers are today, right?
I was going to say in a half hour we got that right.
Yep. What are you thinking? What's the prelim?
Well, you know, it's kind of tough because January, you know, which is the December report, right? This month is the last one we get that actually doesn't have, you know, before we get the rebase. All right, so next month's report has the non-institutional population rebase. And you know, I've been talking about this one for a while because Trump has been running around saying 2 million people have left the United States, as you know, 500,000-600,000 of them by being deported, the rest because they said, "Screw you, I'm leaving," right? So, I mean, you know, that's been the claim all the way through this, you know, through this entire period of time. Well, we're going to find out exactly how full of crap that is, because you know, that's how this works, right?
Yeah. So either is or ain't full of crap, but it'll be an interesting number regardless.
It'll be a very interesting number, but that's next month, okay? December is very typically a month that shows kind of sort of the, you know, the mixed bag from both sides, in that you have on the one hand, you still have parts of the craziness from the hiring for the season, right? But on the other hand, it's not. All right. So this is kind of a, you know, December is always an interesting month for that reason. Now,
yeah, Carl, explain the on the other hand, it's not.
Well, because not all of this normally shows up in December. I mean, normally what you see, and it just depends on how the survey month, you know, where the survey line drops, because it's the third week, right? Is the survey week.
Mm-hmm.
So the calendar alignment matters large when it comes to the holiday and which months that both the hiring, now the firing always happens after the first of the year, all right? So because, duh, Christmas always comes at the same time. But exactly how that calendar aligns in many cases has a significant impact on whether or not you see that seasonal hiring show up in November, in November's report, or whether it shows up in December's report. Because if you miss the survey week before Thanksgiving, and it's off, I mean, you can only, in some cases, it only has to be off by a couple of days, it's in the next month's numbers, okay? So December's number is often kind of weird. Now, normally, this is not a big deal because you just look at both, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we had a shutdown in here, and we had a dislocation in the data reporting. So I'm not so sure that that's going to, in fact, be the case this time around.
Carl, you look at the unwashed numbers. I remember saying when we first started the show, I was writing this article, we're talking 12 years ago. This is back when, people, if you wanted a job at Marshall Fields for 3 weeks, you got one. You got the discount, and you could work at the right shirt counter or whatever.
Right.
The adjustment for December, I remember reading, it was like 251,000 people.
It's huge.
That if 251,000 people, that was like ground zero. So if they hired 251 or 52, they would give you a positive number of 1,000. It was that big of an adjustment. Now, who looks at the world every year and adjusts the adjustment? How's that for a stupid thing to say? And what do you think it is now? I bet it's not 250. It can't be that high.
Well, I don't know. Okay, but remember, you've got two surveys in here. Okay, and this is one of the reasons that the establishment survey, from my point of view, is basically a waste of time, because it has that black box in there that they won't give you the methodology on it. It's just like the deflator. Right? Where'd that one come from, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, somebody made it up. I mean, now, you know, okay, that's being rude, but it is also probably more true than not, right? There is a problem with the establishment, and there always has been. The establishment survey has always been unreliable. I've never believed it. I didn't believe it, 30 years ago when I was running a company. I don't believe it now. The household unadjusted numbers, yes, there's sampling error in it because the sample's relatively small. So there's a decent amount of sampling error in it. But other than sampling error, it's probably a pretty good number. Okay, and only because Christmas comes the same time every single year, right? So if you're looking at 12 months, now, if you're month to month, it's all over the place, which is why I don't do that, which is why the big numbers that matter, the population-adjusted employment number, which is the 12-month run rate delta between non-institutional population and the employed number, that 12-month run rate number is historically been very important from the standpoint of telling us where we are from an economic standpoint. Is the economy actually growing? Is employment actually growing? Are we playing games? Is this a bunch of BS that's coming from, you know, government lies to a large degree? And by the way, when that goes on for a long period of time, more than 6 to 9 months, you tend to get a dislocation out of it because you can only lie for so long before people go, hey, wait a minute, you know, where's the stuff?
Well, I don't think people are in tune with exactly how big this used to be, because there were people that, well, I'll use the term regular jobs. I mean, one of them, a longtime friend and partner to the show died in the car accident a few years ago, Robin, she would do this every year in New York. And yeah. I mean, she would, I don't know if she went to Needless Markup or Macy's, one of those places, but it wasn't like you had a trainer. She went to the same, I don't know if she was in the blouse aisle or the
oh, yeah.
perfume aisle or something. She walked in, they'd give her, these are the three new brands, and it was like she was just there from last year. I mean, so she did that for years. So it wasn't like you had this training thing and yet people didn't know what they were talking about. But I'll bet, what do you figure, I'm going to say State Street here. Kevin, what were the number you'd put on it? I'd say 2,000 people were hired at Carson's, Fields, Weibolts, and Sears on State Street, maybe Gold, but maybe it was 4,000 people.
Oh, you know what? It was utterly huge.
Yeah, and New York had to be bizarre.
Well, yeah, I mean, but, you know, my office was downtown at 2 Prue. Okay, so during the holiday season, I would, you know, I'd go in there during, you know, do my Christmas shopping at lunch because I could walk over there underground.
Well, if you were a red-blooded male, and most of us, you know, we like to still be saying that we are, if you didn't find a way to walk through the ground floor of Fields at lunchtime,
oh God, yeah,
you were out of your mind. Every lady in the city at some point during the week found her way to at least walk through the perfume aisle and all the other stuff that was on the first floor.
Betcha.
It was
sort of like First National Plaza in the summer.
Yeah.
well, yeah, I mean, you know, they're duh, do you think that that Fields didn't know this?
Well,
I mean, you know, hello. But the thing is, of course, you know, things have changed so much now from the standpoint of how retail works, right? I mean, what percentage of all of the stuff that was bought for Christmas was, you know, was ordered on Spamazon or somewhere similar to that, right?
Yeah, so Amazon and Amazon distribution centers did the hiring this time.
Oh, yeah.
So did Walmart distribution centers and any number of other ones. So that's where the hiring is. And
God knows they
churn through people like crazy anyway. So that's going to give you a whole different spin on the numbers, because a lot of those people that get hired for seasonal work wind up coming back and getting and staying on full time if they want to, because people don't stay at Amazon for a long time.
Well, the
a lot of people don't stay. Yeah.
One of the things that's interesting about that, though, Kevin, is that, and I've been paying attention to this for a while, is that TTW, Trade Transportation Warehousing, is the new retail barometer. Okay. And it used to be that you had the seasonal hiring and firing in the top line, but it was all in retailers. Right, you know, because Fields and, you know, Macy's and those guys, you know, Lord and Taylor and all those guys, he had to have those people on the floor because everybody was coming in there to buy their Christmas shit, right? That's not true so much anymore. But where you can't get away from is that if you're sitting there on your computer clicking away or your phone or whatever have you, TTW is how all that stuff gets to you. So, you can say, you know, you've always had Shopper Track, you've had the guys that basically, you know, data analytics firms, in the packaged consumer products, grocery store type of space, the two big companies that did that historically was IRI and Nielsen.
What do you guys, go ahead, I have a question when you're done.
Yeah, so I mean, that was IRI and Nielsen, but in the retail space for like the Christmas season, you know, you had Visa, which of course, you know, they have the credit card data, right? The tape data as stuff's being.
So they got activity, yeah.
Yeah, they've got that, and then you had Shopper Track, which would tell you, okay, you know, how many bags are in people's hands in the malls. Okay, now of course, you know, that again with everything going online is less of a thing than it used to be. But is it completely gone? I don't.
You saw a lot of times you want to. I like to see what I'm buying, you know. And plus,
I'm just saying, I don't think it's completely gone. But I mean, if you look at the consumer report, retail, you know, the Mart, it's called Marts. That comes out, the you know, that report has been posting up 10% year-over-year growth in non-store retailers for, oh, good God, what, 20 years now?
Kevin, you're our supply-side and organizational genius. What do you think?
It's scary.
When Carl's just talking about, you know, and I was talking about the old days, what do you suppose the difference in amount of stuff returned is between somebody where you talk to somebody who knows what they're selling, you get the right size, and you get to see it versus, I'm reading some stuff here. This year they're talking to 15 to 25% of total sales get returned. We're talking, you know, $300 billion?
Yeah, that's nuts.
That's insane. I mean, I would.
Yeah, because it's what it's doing, it isn't so much, you know, assuming stuff gets returned in good condition because it doesn't fit and things like that. You know, stuff that's broken is always a problem. When I talk about, you know, when I teach quality, there's a word I have created called RIFPOC, which is your worst level of quality. RIFPOC stands for returned item from pissed off customer. You know, you got to do it right the first time, that's DIRFT. Do it right the second time is DIRST. Third time is TIASO, throw it away, start over, and then the fourth is RIFPOC. So you know, I like to structure the thinking that way. Okay, that's fine. But there's this whole other element of, yeah, you know, this one in a large is cut differently from a different one in a large. So I ordered it, it doesn't fit, I try it on, I'd send it back. That's an expensive way to do business because you have all the shipping. Now, in Amazon's case, they've built out their network. So, yeah, you can return it at UPS, and UPS will handle a lot of it. But you can return things at places like Whole Foods, and, you know, that's just part of their network, and they have stuff going back and forth there anyway. So the marginal cost of it is fairly low. But you're still paying to ship things that you didn't sell when they come back, and that's always a problem. It's an expensive way to do business. When I'm looking at, you know, where we are now, I have the ISM report open now, and again, look at the summary comments at the top: new orders contracting, production expanding,
yep,
employment contracting, supplier delivery slower, raw materials inventories contracting, customer inventories too low, price right, increase unchanged, exports and imports contract. What is, you know, this is kind of a mixed bag of things going on, and I don't know what to make of it.
Well, I, you know, what I see in this is exactly that. All right, what I don't see is the rah-rah that everybody, you know, I mean, turn on CNBC, you know, best shopping season ever, the consumer is incredibly strong.
Carol, they want you to send them a check. They charge a percentage. Well, if the market goes up, they make more money.
Of course they do. And, yeah, and not only that, they really don't want the people that are stuffing, you know, their percentage in their 401k every month to say, hey, you know what, go stick that in treasuries for the time being.
Yeah.
I have a friend of mine who just got a delayed bequest, and the funds that were sent over was all in two mutual funds. Okay, now
you see a lot of that.
Well, he knows exactly nothing about finance. I mean, like, literally nothing. There's a little basis problem there that you know, and I've warned him to be very, very careful until we get enough information that, you know, that I can look at it and give him an idea of, okay, where's the deferred taxes in this, right? Because,
well, he should have had, sometimes you get taxes on stuff that they've done, he should have been paying some along the way.
Well you got distributions that come off mutual funds, right? Yeah, so those are taxable when they happen, that's been accorded, you know, that's been taken care of by the trustee, but now it's in his hands.
Okay,
all right, and the thing is, at this, you know, back in the time of the great financial crisis, before some of the changes were made, the brokerages didn't give you the basis. You had to track it yourself. All right.
I went through that yesterday. If 10 years ago, if you'd have shipped 1,000 shares IBM into PTI and wanted us to sell it for you, the thing that got reported was the sale price.
That's right. But you had not the basis.
Yeah, you had to match it up.
Well, I had to, you know, yeah. I had to deal with this with my mother. Well,
and options, yeah. options, they didn't get anything. You had to do the whole mess for options.
You had to do, had to do the whole thing, right? So, I mean, I used to file phone book size tax returns in some years.
Yeah,
right? That's the way it is. And, you know, and I said, look, this is what you have, you know, in account value. I said, but I don't have the foggiest clue. If you get out of this because you think the market's expensive and you want to go sit in treasuries, I have absolutely zero idea what your tax liability is going to be if you do that. And oh, by the way, if you turn around, you blow that money, you've got a big problem.
Oh, yeah. I mean, most of the times now, we get stuff from other firms, or if you were to look at somebody has an account here and they have 15 stacks, I bet most of the time we have basis on all, certainly on everything you bought here we have basis on.
Yeah.
But it comes in that way. The one you have somewhat of an issue with is we used to have a lot of problems with, we don't have so many anymore, but we used to have a lot of people who were UPS workers. And UPS, when you left, you got all this stock. Well, right. you're picking up, you know, a share a month, or God knows, for 25, 30
years. Oh, yeah,
years.
And the basis list is, you know, the five pages
long. The company
long.
Wouldn't even help you out, I mean, on some of the stuff. It was, but so, I mean, you know, that was a problem. I mean, some of these guys, their basis is like $4 or something.
It's like, okay, well, if this thing's, this had been sitting in the trustee, you know, in the trustee's hands for quite a long period of time, Chief. So,
yeah.
The problem there is, okay, this basis calculation for a mutual fund is not necessarily trivial. All right, now does the brokerage even have it? Is it, when I go look at this and try to help him out, is it going to be there, or is this going to be one of those have to reconstruct crap things? Because God forbid the IRS turns around and tries to tell you it's zero.
Well, I mean, if it's telephone, and somebody could tell me, hey, I don't know what the basis was, but I bought it in 1974 on August 10th, I can find the closing price on August 10th, 1974.
We're talking about two mutual funds.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that's a problem.
Okay, and I'm like, you know, I mean, I looked at what it was, and I'm like, those are two mutual funds. I said, you do not touch. I mean, you know, because of course, you know, it's a guy who doesn't have a lot of money, and all of a sudden he's got some. You know, I do not touch that until this gets figured out. I said, I can help you do it. You know, you're probably gonna need a tax professional this coming year, because, you know, it was after the January 1st. I said, I'm not that guy.
Well, I'm going to lob this one out there, because I'm not your tax guy. Don't ever think I am. But I think if a mutual fund had bought IBM at 100 and sold it at 200, they have to send you that tax liability that year, right?
Well, yeah, but the challenge is some of this is in distributions, they're taxable at, you know, as what they are at the time, right? And from the turnover. But if you've got a mutual fund that has very little turnover in the portfolio,
well, then you got a problem.
So I mean, you know, and with what's happened with the market over the last, you know, 10-15 years, this guy could have a basis that's, you know, a quarter of the current value.
Well, that's why we're not going to talk about it today. Well, maybe later on we will, because we're take an early break here because we're going to back at these labor numbers. But
yeah,
when the person in the guy, the representative in California, talked about a wealth tax, which, you know, I'm not for, that's where the money is, Carl. I mean, why do you rob a bank? Because that's where they keep the money, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, exactly. So
S&P futures up. We're going a little early here because we come back.
And I'm dropping off you guys. Right. You have a nice weekend, and I'll talk to you next week.
All right, Kevin. You're watching the Bears, I assume. You're going out to watch them or at home?
No, I'll watch them at home.
We'll stay awake.
I'll watch them at home. The Irish are playing at 6:00. I think I'll probably I may go to that and ditch out at halftime and get home in time for the Bears, because one thing I don't have set up is recording on Amazon Prime, and I'd have to look into figure out how to do it.
Yeah, but you're a high tech dude. That should be a big problem.
I'm sure I could do it if I wanted to.
Or you could say,
also usually go in and say join from the beginning or join from in progress, but I don't like watching games that have already happened, so we'll see how it works out.
SP Futures up 12, NASDAQ Futures up 49. As soon as these numbers come out, that's going to jumble all over. But we'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jacks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen, Ricky on the board. We're going to buzz quick here because these numbers are going to change in a minute. S&P Futures now up 13, NASDAQ Futures up 58. Again, we got the labor numbers coming out. DAX up 86.3%, FTSE up 66.7%, CAC round up 74.9%. So bullish in Europe, over in Asia. Nikkei up 822. They were down yesterday, but that's a big move. Nikkei, Hang Seng up 82.3%, Shanghai up 37.9%. The bonds. We were at a big move up yesterday. We're up to 4.19 on the 10-year. That's as high as it's been in a while. It's something you have to watch, by the way, market-wise. Oil up 42 cents, but still right at 58 bucks, 58.18, so nothing going on there. Gold up 14 bucks, 44.74. Why don't you do us a real quick traffic, weather, sports, and then we'll be back and all the stuff will move.
Morning, Chief. It's currently 7:30 a.m. here in Chicago. 45 degrees right now with a high of 48. Phoenix, Arizona, 42 with a high of 61. Traffic in Chicago, last night's storm caused quite a few floodings in the city, one of which can be found westbound at Kennedy by Foster Avenue. Other than that, traffic is looking pretty clear in all major expressways. Let's do sports real quick. Tomorrow, we start the wildcard playoffs. Rams at Panthers at 3:30 p.m. and Packers at Bears at 7 p.m. Today, we got Capitals at Blackhawks at 7 p.m. And yesterday, the Bulls game has been postponed due to the court condensation. Makeup day is still to be determined. And lastly, Suns host Knicks today at 8 p.m. That's all I got for you, Chief. Back to you.
Court condensation.
Court condensation, yes, sir. I think it's due to the rain or whatever.
Probably the humidity and the ice underneath it, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
Plus 50.
Oh, all right. We're there. Let me...
Plus 50, 4.4%. So now, by the way, the BLS says that down two ticks is little changed.
Yeah.
I think they've been saying this for a while, right? Let's see.
I had the November rate at 4.5, not at 4.4.
I have 4.6.
You had 4.6?
Down two ticks. So this is interesting. The food service and drinking places up, big shock, right? It's the holidays. You bring on some extra bartenders because people are getting smashed. Healthcare up 21. Now that's a substantial drop from the average of 34. So we've seen the 24, the 34 area. By the way, in 2024. The average monthly gain in screwing people was plus 56,000. This last year it was plus 34,000, and last month it was plus 21, which is interesting. Now this is all in the establishment survey. I haven't gotten to the table that I pick up my numbers from yet.
I'm looking at the dumb table. You always tell me it's a dumb table.
Well, I wanted to read the top section first. Retail trade, minus 25 in December.
In December, okay. That's almost unheard of.
That is unheard of. Okay, minus 25, employment decline in warehouse clubs, supercenters, and general merchandise, minus 19. And in food and beverage retailers, i.e. grocery stores and booze stores, minus 9. Essentially, no unch for all intents and purposes in federal government plus 2,000, and it doesn't mean anything. And unch in pretty much everywhere else by any substantial amount. Oh, by the way, here's the other tell in this data, and I'm going to have to go dig into the table and see whether or not this establishment number actually plays out in some of the detail tables while you talk for a second. And that is average work week down by a tenth. Now that's you know, that's usually what happens. Why? Because you cut hours before you fire people.
Well, I'm looking at this. There's a thing that I always rag about every month is this unemployment rate is kind of a useless number, because if you look at
it is.
If you look at the amount of people that are unemployed or we don't know what they're doing, if you add those two numbers together, it's exactly even from the last month. But somehow they've deduced that less people are actually looking for a job than the month before. And I don't know how you. That's
well,
the difference.
They come up with all kinds of.
Yeah, but that's the difference between the 4.5 or 4.6 and the 4.4. But if you look at the total number.
So here's the other. So
we actually do have one tick up in the percentage of people working. That's probably a decent. That's probably a positive, a little bit anyway.
Well, what I got, okay, yes and no. All right, so I just, you know, updated the entries here. So the gross change in the household survey unadjusted was -346,000. Okay, it was a negative.
These guys got it positive 230 after the adjustment.
Yeah, well, we dial. We play with the knob, right? This is no knobs. The screw you, we don't know what you're doing column was +929. Okay, that's not going the right way.
No.
Remember, I've been talking about this for a while, the population adjusted employment number, which is, you know, the 12-month run rate, the difference between employed, take out the growth in the non-institutional working age population. Okay, so, you know, subtract that back out. Remember, I've been talking about when that has a more than about 6 month negative trend with the slope going the wrong way, it portends very, very bad things that are going to happen. Exactly when they're going to happen, not necessarily so well known, but that they will happen is essentially a given. We have a serious problem here. It's -2.752.
Or explain again, since that is so formal, exactly what that is to everybody.
Okay, the way you compute this is you take the non-institutional working age population, which is everyone who's 16 or older, is not in a nursing home, in jail, you know, whatever have you, which currently, the current number on that is 274,816. Okay, 274 million, almost 275 million.
It's like 800,000 more than August.
Well, this is that number, by the way, is an extrapolation throughout the year. That's the one that gets rebased in next month's report. Okay, off the ACS. So that is the one that was going
last
to
year. Last year, when Carl was talking about, that was a 3 million person adjustment in January,
which was all Biden letting people into the country. Okay, whether people want to admit it or not, that's what it was. It's, and people say, oh, no, they're not picked up because, you know, they're illegal. BS. It is picked up. It's a survey, and all they do is how many people are in your household. Okay, it's off the ACS. So, yes, it is. But Trump's claim that he's throwing all these people out is either going to be reflected in this number next month or it's not. Right? And if it isn't, then he's lying. And that's the end of the conversation on that. I mean, it works both ways. You cannot say it shows up for one guy, it doesn't show up for the other. We'll find out whether or not that's there. Now, if that number, in fact, does drop by 2 million, which, by the way, it shouldn't drop by 2 million. It should basically be unch from last January, because the normal growth is about 2 million people a year. All right? So basically...
Which we are up since... January. So we're following the normal path so far.
Right, but what I'm saying is that, well, that's because it's an extrapolation. You start from January and then there's extrapolation, okay? But what we should see is that about 2 million people essentially come back out, because that if Trump's claims are true, then that non-institutional population, when it rebases next month, should be approximately in the same place that it was for last January.
If his claims are true, it's by accident, but it's an editorial.
Well, I don't know. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
But if that happens, then this 12-month run rate number goes from -2.7 to -4.7.
Okay, what I'm saying, since the adjustment in January, if you're talking about 2 million a year added to the population, that's essentially where the number is now. And you're saying we need, next month we'll find out if there's an adjustment to that, correct?
What I'm saying is that this, that the deterioration in this series continues unabated. It's bad. It portends, right,
this is the amount of people working versus the amount of people here totally.
Correct. Yeah. Amount of people who could work.
Yep.
Right. Amount of people who could work versus the amount of people working. And the 12-month, it is a 12-month run rate change. So it takes the seasonality out of it because, you know, December's December. Right?
Well, and so you can get most of this by looking at this participation number, right?
Kind of.
Because January was 60.1% of the people available to work were working. And now we're down to 59.7. We were 59.6 last month. Well, it doesn't seem like a lot, but it's a lot.
Well, off the unadjusted, we're 59.5 in January. Yeah, well, 59.8 in December of last year, of 2024, and now we're at 59.6. Okay, now that is, each tick in that number is about 600,000 jobs. So that's 1.5 million jobs that have disappeared on that basis. Now, according to this, when adjusted for population, it's 2.8 million.
And the everyman look at this is how many people are working, and it's unfair to say paying for other people because a lot of people in the last column are retired and got more money than God and don't need anybody helping them. So it's, you know, you don't really know, but if you ever get down to a spot where, you know, 50% of the people working, I think you got a problem. Maybe 55, maybe we're there at 59.7. A number to be healthy really should be 62, 63, somewhere in there, Colonel.
Well, yeah, but that's obviously not going to happen.
No.
Maybe it will, but if it does, it will come on the back of some really ugly stuff.
If somebody did very well in life and retires at 55 and you know, he's living off his own dough, he's no harm to anybody. I mean, you're not paying for him, but it's, you know.
I understand that, but Chief, that's
That's not a normal thing.
That's not a statistically substantial component of this. Okay.
Well, 103 million people that we don't know what they're doing. How many do you think are students and retired? There's got to be some breakdown of it.
Well, of course, some of it is, but I mean, you know, you look at the delta. I mean, by the way, on an adjusted basis, it's 104.094 this month. So yeah.
It's a million people more than they've adjusted? How could that be?
Oh, because, you know, we got a knob twist because if that number, you know, going up in a substantial way, nobody wants to have that conversation. Especially not if you're the president.
No.
No, nobody wants to have that conversation. By the way, who got hosed last month in the NSA number on educational attainment? Well, you're going to love this. If you had no diploma at all, no high school, okay, you know, you quit or you're still in high school, whatever, and there's some of both in there, right? That was, for all intents and purposes, UNCH. Employment population ratio actually was up a tick, but in the participation rate, it was flat. So, you know, because the size of that is the civilian labor force went up a little bit. So that's for all intents and purposes, UNCH. If you are a high school graduate, however, you got bent over the table and got the shaft because that went from 55.4 unemployment population to 54.8.
Wow.
That's a 6-tick drop. That's big. Now, interestingly enough, those people, if you look at the how many of them are looking for jobs, those people are couch surfing because the official unemployment rate among that cohort went down 3 ticks. Yeah, so those guys went into the NILF number.
And so until somebody can explain to me, Lucy, how we figure out whether you're looking or not.
There's that. Well, they ask in the household survey
I think they cheat, and once you fall off getting the check, they pretty much count you out.
Well, they call, not if you get called. If you get called, they ask. Yeah. If you get called, are you looking for work? Now in the some college area, okay, those guys also got bent over the table. It's down by 6 ticks from 60.0 to 59.3, and their unemployment rate actually went up by 3 ticks. Okay, so there you got people who actually are trying to get work and you know, officially, and that don't look so good. So guess what? If you have some you know, some level of education, that's you know, that's not a positive thing. And the,
hey,
the
Kevin one, Kevin claims there's a big hiring issue in the tech sector. From what he's seeing in his area, the companies went on a hiring binge as their market caps grew. Now they realize that they are grossly overstaffed.
Yeah, they're
and
they're blaming
AI. So it's really not AI; it's their own bad judgment.
It's not AI. It was the stupidity coming out of the pandemic.
Yeah,
is what it was. Is that you've got a bunch of people that are dumb, and you know, if we build it, they will come. Well, guess what? At some point, people run out of money. That's, you know, they run into that problem. Now, the one bright spot is that people with an actual bachelor's degree or better did see improvement. So, and fairly substantial improvement.
Well, I just, the part that we all want, I think, no matter who you are, and, you know, and I'll say Trump gives a lot of lip service to it, only because Biden gave a lot of lip service to us, Obama, I mean, you name it. Everybody gives his lip service to small business and medium-sized businesses being the hiring engine.
Right.
And by the way, it's absolutely true, but I don't know of a president in the last 5 that has done anything to help that group.
Well, there's an undercurrent in here that's pretty ugly too, which is that the disabled rate was up almost 1.5 million in the last 12 months.
So that's long-term it's long-term unemployment, basically.
And gotta be careful here because
not everybody.
This doesn't necessarily say that those people are their unemployment rate went up over that same period of time quite substantially. Okay, but an awful lot of people that have a disability that report is having a significant, and you know, the BLS has their own definition of what that is. It's a significant life-limiting condition of some kind, right? But the problem with this number is that this number frequently skyrockets during recessions, which makes absolutely no sense. You don't magically get sick because it was a recession, right? So some of this is gaming. There is plenty of that goes on in this. But when you have supposedly a strong economy and you're seeing these numbers rise, the imputation from that is that it's real, as opposed to people trying to game the system.
Well, if you have Social Security, help me with this, is actually 4 different spots, right? It's old age, which most people are very familiar with.
Right.
It's aid to dependent children, right?
Right.
It's a burial insurance, correct? It's not very much, but it's something.
Well, it's OASDI is the technical, yeah.
And then there is long-term disability.
Right. Well, SSDI, which is the disability check, is takes a decent amount of time and is fairly tough to get. But there is a lot of fraud in it. There's plenty of people that are on it that aren't really disabled to any substantial degree or at all. In fact, there used to be a time when journalists would catch these guys who were grabbing checks running marathons.
I
remember the news articles on it.
Well, remember the article that you and I have talked about, you know, a couple of times, and maybe it's time for some of a repeat since you brought it up. I can't find the thing. I think the guy won a Pulitzer Prize, but he wrote about a 4-page article in the Washington Post way back. It had to do with the Horseshoe of Despair. Remember that article?
Yeah. No. Yeah, we've talked about it before.
He started with essentially West Virginia, went south,
right,
over west, and then up into like Arkansas and Missouri,
it's essentially Appalachia, and then the westward extension of that into the ag areas,
and south into Alabama and Mississippi, and so forth. And he was talking about the different people that are in. I'll use the term.
Oh yeah, and these are people that all the work is manual labor of some kind, and they can't do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's just the way.
Well,
it is.
Well, he talked about the people in West Virginia, which had, was it the 3 trailers strung together?
And
they got something like 5 or 6 or 7 different checks.
for
this kind of disability. But nobody had ever gone for an exam. They had one kid was getting something for autism, but he had never been examined. I mean, maybe there had to be something wrong with him living in the trailer with these other people all day long and not coming out. I mean, not saying the kid was normal, but they. And then he went further south. But there was one county, was it Alabama or Mississippi? I thought it was Alabama, where a doctor kept, certifying these people for essentially long-term disability. And one of the ladies they interviewed, they have a lot of, you know, I guess they got, what do you want to call them, nursing homes and stuff down there. Well, the lady had worked in a place, and she was in her early 50s, I'm thinking, Carol. And they didn't have any of them.
Her back was basically wasted.
Well, if you've ever gone to one of these places, I know my stepfather was in the one in Manteno.
Oh, they're horrible.
Well, this place, if somebody went to get somebody out of bed, especially my stepfather was light, so he wasn't an issue, but a lot of people aren't, they actually had a thing they would wheel in, and the person would, and they'd put your arms in there, and the thing would lift, help lift the person out of bed.
Right.
So, but in most places, don't have that, so that's the job of the person lifting somebody out.
Which, by the way, is a bad leverage position.
Oh, yeah.
And big injury producer, which is why they have that machine.
Well, this guy interviewed one of the ladies, and she said, well, you know, I don't know anybody, none of my friends have ever had a job sitting down.
Right.
She goes, if you could train us, I'm willing to go to work. You could train us for a job like the rest of the people have in the country. Not everybody, but a lot of people work, you know, manual labor.
But there aren't any.
Yeah, she goes. But I don't need. But I can't do the jobs here available to me. So for those, I'm disabled. And well, you couldn't argue with her, could you?
Well, no. I mean, her back's wasted. She can't. You know. Yeah. And the thing is that when you get down to it, you have all this shifting of the blame thing that goes on throughout the system, right? Because nobody wants to stand up and say, well, yeah, we screwed the pooch, and by the way, it's our fault. Nobody likes that very much.
No.
The other thing that, just looking through some of these tables, the average weekly hours numbers, other than in trade transportation, transportation warehousing, as expected, the number of people driving, you know, UPS trucks or whatever, those hours were up about four tenths. However, here's the problem: wholesale trade down a tick, retail trade down two. And utilities, now interestingly enough, utilities work hours up, which I guess maybe because of the storms, because we have had some, okay, in December.
Well, I'll tell you what, if yesterday's rain in Chicago had been snow, you wouldn't have seen me till May.
Well, I'm just saying.
We got so much rain last night, I've never seen like that in January last night. It looked like something you get in July that kept on for like, we must have got 2-3 inches of rain last night.
We've got that front's headed this direction. We're going to get it today and probably into tomorrow. And the only reason that it's not a snowpocalypse is it's too warm.
Yeah.
If you happen to be north of the line where that's going to be frozen, you're in for a whole bunch of fun. But remember, back in May, I said this was going to happen. Okay, to your area of the country, and my former area of the country. And oh boy, is it in spades. So, I mean, here's, so the thing is, though, is, I mean, like looking at these numbers, in general, the overtime hours is pretty flat, but the places where you'd expect to see this over the holidays, the what hours? Okay. Now, I'm sure everybody's going to run around and try to tell you that this is not a big deal because it all went online and, you know, everybody bought all the Christmas presents on Amazon. Da, 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 da. Okay, maybe true, maybe not true. I don't know. But what I certainly don't see anything in here that says that we've got a particularly strong consumer-led economy. And oh, by the way, weekly checks in manufacturing were negative. Okay, now not by a lot, but you know, not positive, not growing. You know, these are, you know, I mean, checks is obviously hourly rate times hours, right? I mean, that was kind of easy. Non-durable goods up a tiny, or durable goods up a tiny little bit. Non-durable goods actually down. All right, this is again weekly checks. All right, so this is hours getting cut on the service providing side. Trade, transportation, utilities as a whole's up a little bit, but then you start looking at some of this. Wholesale trade's negative, retail trade's negative. These are actual checks going out, you know, out into people's pockets. Transportation, warehousing, on a check basis, is negative. All right, now that's what do we got going on there, right? Utilities is up, so that's in trade, transportation, warehousing, utilities is you know, is all part of the thing. But when you look at the breakout, utilities kind of saved it from being a, you know, pretty nasty little red number. And then in other areas, you know, it's pretty much unch. There's not really a whole lot going on. Leisure and hospitality is average weekly check up a couple of bucks. So, you know, big, yeah, okay, people go to the bar over the holiday. But this is not a strong report.
I don't see how it could be, to be honest with you.
I don't see anything in here that, you know, that tells me anything.
I think the economy is actually contracting, and I think the number,
It absolutely is, Chief, and from a labor perspective, it has been doing it on a population adjusted basis. When did this trend go negative? Let me quickly scan up this table. This trend went negative in December 23.
I think what we do on the show, even though we're a lot of times jousting with the various people, which is fine because that's where you get some new ideas. It is funny how people are being driven to look at whatever they're being told to look at. I never thought I'd see our society being forced to look at having the government or people not only give you the news, that they don't really give you the straight story, but they tell you the story behind the news and interpret it for you. I was last night, a guy comes by once in a while. Thursday night's kind of our night, we all meet, and he was giving me some long story about how Trump is spot on in inflation numbers because he bought gas and God knows where the hell he was for $1.99, and I was about to go through the thing, but I wasn't going to. But I mean, you're talking. By the way, that's a good thing. I mean, I don't have the Suburban anymore with the 40-gallon tank, but still, I like it better when the dollars turn a little slower. It's not like I'm not, but I think. I'm smart enough or maybe inquisitive enough to say, okay, the average person drives 1,000 miles a month. The average car, let's say, gets 20 miles at a gallon. So we're talking 50 gallons.
Right.
So if you drop the price of gas 50 cents, it's $25, which, is, by the way, is very welcome. Okay.
$25 is $25.
Yeah, it's 20, but when you look at somebody getting a new heater or air conditioner that's up, 40% in the last or whatever, and you talk about what does a firm pay now? I have to ask my bro. What does a firm pay now for a full thing of health insurance for a family per month? It's got to be $2,500. I mean, we're talking about stuff that just blows away what you're actually paying, and especially if you have a city where your taxes went up $5,000 or something.
Right.
I mean, you have to sort of stay focused. And I mean, I was trying not to be political early with Kevin, but I said, we're all over the Venezuelans for getting a loan from the Chinese that's one-tenth the loan we owe the guys.
okay, all right. Now, wait a minute. If you want to be technical about that, you do realize that there are very old bonds that we bought from China, and then China repudiated them and has never paid. They defaulted on them, and it's actually about the same amount of money that we owe them. They owe us.
When did we ever loan them $600 billion?
In today's funds amount, yes, we did, prior to the current Chinese government existing. And they defaulted.
What are we talking about? Chiang Kai-shek?
No, I'm talking about, oh, way, 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 go, 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 way, 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 way. Do you think that like the world just started like the last 50 years?
I by the way, as you know, I did some work for a couple clients in trying to get somebody to pony up for their 1920s, 1930s German gold-backed bearer bonds that Hitler said we're not paying and never did.
Yeah, well, there's a whole bunch of this kind of stuff that, by the way, the People's Republic of China defaulted on these in 1949.
I'm saying sometimes you got to look at sometimes you have to look in the mirror before you start accusing other people. But hey, what I have a question, and Kevin just brought this up. You're the guy who rags the most about the Treasury statements every month.
Yeah.
How exactly are we going to make it through to November, the election, and certainly the next 2 years of Trump's term without a serious tax increase? The guy's not going to be able to steal that from other countries. And it's
Well, you're not. And the problem is, which you're seeing, and I know, you know, I listen even when I'm not on, right? Because, you know, I do that. You guys were talking about the long end blowing up in their face. At the long end of the curve, right?
Yeah.
Well, guess what? You know, you were noting this rather gappy kind of change in the short to long end of the curve yesterday,
right?
Right. that's one of the charts I have on my trading desk, and it's I'm looking at it. And I'm like, yeah, okay. There'd be dragons there, and. So I don't think, you know, this is one of the reasons I put the predictions I did forward in terms of this coming year. I don't see how we get through this year without this ending very, very poorly from a standpoint of both Treasury and the markets, especially given what you're seeing in the reaction in the equities, where it's and much of this being driven by behaviors that are wild-eyed, crazy stuff that if we had any kind of DOJ, nobody'd ever get away with that crap, right? I mean, this kind of memory stuff, the memory stuff is one of the most glaring immediate examples, but it's hardly the only one.
Well, Kevin just asked the question, what happens with the 100% depreciation and the new tax laws and stuff?
That kills revenue, right?
Yeah.
Because... Now, the thing is, though, is it's a pull forward. All right. Clinton did this when he was in office for a couple of years. And it was one of the things that drove some of the dislocation.
First of all, on a cash basis, it doesn't do anything to anybody, right?
That's right.
Except for the tax part of it.
Well, it's a time shift.
Yeah.
Okay. Because what it essentially allows. Like I said, we took advantage of this when I was running MCS. Clinton puts this thing gets it into the tax code that you can 100% expense with certain limitations and, you know, limits and things like this. Okay, fine. Well, I got to buy $1 million worth of equipment this year. I get to take that off the top line. All right. Now, the problem is I can only do it once.
Yeah, keep it. On a simple end, just maybe people can work.
Well,
through
so
it
here's
easier.
Here's the way to think.
Well,
about
let's
it.
Say let's say we don't need one. We say PTI decided the chief needs a new pickup. We went out and spent $100,000 on a pickup. Make it $90,000. Well, I think you depreciate vehicles. Let's say it's 3 years. I don't know. I've been out of this for a mess. Okay, we go out and we plunk down. We either get a loan or we plunk down the $90,000 and give a guy a check at the car dealer. And okay, so now what happens? We have this asset. And we get to deduct $30,000 this year, or we can double declining balance. Let's keep it simple. We deduct $30,000 a year from become expenses, or we can take the whole $90,000 this year. Well, if we have $90,000 worth of income, okay, that's nice. We can run it. We can bounce it up against there. It also means we don't pay any taxes this year. But next year,
no deduction.
Yeah, you have no deduction. So
So all this is a time shift. Okay, but it games the numbers from a standpoint in both ways. It games earnings numbers for corporations.
Yep.
Because you can do that offset, right? You don't have to pay taxes.
Well, it means you have two sets of books. You want to tell people you made $100,000. You don't want to tell them you made 10.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
But the thing is that from a tax perspective, what it does is it's a kick in the nuts to Treasury this year.
Yeah, right? Just mean people have two sets of books.
Right, but yeah. But part of what's going on here, Chief, and I'm absolutely convinced of this, is that this is to a large degree narrative control from the media and from especially social media. I'll give you an example. Supposedly on X, I have almost 12,000 people who follow me. Okay, now I've done this test a couple of times, but I ran it yesterday. I put up the article about all the stuff with Minnesota and law enforcement activity, and that Trump and Blondie could stop this in a day because you are an accessory after the fact if you impede a law enforcement action to arrest somebody. And there are two people in my who formerly lived in my county that are currently sitting in the dock right now awaiting trial on murder charges. They didn't actually kill somebody, but they covered for someone and impeded the arrest of the person who did it. And they were indicted and charged as accessories after the fact to the homicide. Okay? Now, if you wanted to stop this nonsense about people pulling cars in front of ICE agents and this kind of
what,
thing.
What part of the nonsense with the people with masks and M16s in the street?
I'm talking about the laws that exist and has existed for 100 years.
This is a whole discussion, but
you rob a bank and I'm out there and I do and as you're getting away, I block the cop car. All right, who's chasing you? You robbed a bank. There's a cop car chasing you. I blocked the cop car. I can be charged as an accessory to the robbery, even though I didn't know you
robbed
the bank.
You can't be charged if you got shot in the face and killed.
If you charged these people with being an accessory, let's say that the illegal alien that they were chasing raped somebody. If you charged the person who blocked them with being an accessory to rape, this would stop instantly because nobody's going to go to prison for 20 years. To block an ICE truck, okay? All right, now, I wrote an article about this, and I put it up there on X. I supposedly have 12,000 people who follow me, supposedly, all right? In 9 hours, it surfaced it to 300 people only.
What happened to the other people?
It buried the story on purpose so nobody would see it.
Ah.
Now, You want to have a debate about economic things or about whatever, right? I mean, I just use as an example because this was the article I used as the test, okay? About a current event thing. Being a current event thing, you'd think it would be relatively well circulated, right? Well, of course, you have to see it in order to look at it.
Well, that's the truth.
And it was deliberately buried. Well, now Chief, these guys do this on all sides.
I know, but
Have
you picked up the phone? We got a dash here, but have you picked up the phone and called five people that you know are on the list and know for a fact they didn't get it?
Yeah, actually, there's a substantial percentage of the people who do follow me are on my forum and have accounts, and they said they never saw it.
So not anything, not redacted, zero.
Never seen.
Wow.
Okay, now this is what goes on.
Well, who's in charge of all this?
Obviously Elon, he owns the thing, doesn't he?
Well.
All right, but see, here's the thing.
Censorship is such a bad thing for anybody else but me.
Chief, think about the shaping, how this is used to shape people's, you know, stuff, right? How do you have a conversation with people? How do you actually get to it, take it out of the social issues that are going on right now? Because you know we could have a 4-hour debate on that. Just look at the economic data.
Oh yeah.
All right. This, you know, I know. As soon as we get off this, the spin machine is going full bore on this jobs report.
Sure it is.
Right? And yet the data is right there, and I will put up.
Yeah,
an
article
on it,
nobody wants.
I always
to,
do.
You. And, If you are, yep. If you don't like the administration, you're going to go to the losers on the far left, and they're going to give you the one story, or you're going to go to the losers on the far right, and oh by the way, the story is in the middle, and you and I keep trying to get the story. Where does that get us? I mean,
Right? Yeah, it's you know, it's terrible, and yet here we are with, you know, with terrible issues. Okay, when you think about it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Tuesday, I want to make sure we kick this up. So, Ricky, write it down. Who exactly, whether you love what Trump's doing or whether you don't, the criticism, I think, that is absolutely for sure spot on from me is, even if you like what he's doing, the mind changes back and forth so many times that he'll never stay on focus. I mean, yeah. There's no way that somebody is going to put $4 billion or $10 billion into, after what happened this week, is already inking the check for Venezuela. I mean, and nobody, you know, here is going to, whatever you're supposed to be doing here, young people, smaller firms are not doubling the size of their 20-person place and going out and getting a loan because they think that tomorrow we're actually going to get some stuff from overseas back or we're going to... Nobody's... Yeah. If you and I were billionaires, we're not writing a check for a new shipyard. We want an order first.
I mean, and I want a non-cancelable order because all I got to do is look at what Carter did to the nuclear industry.
Yeah,
by the way, is
Northrop going to expand to come up to 2,000 Patriot missiles a year, or are they going to just ramp up gradually and that's it? I mean,
the latest screed out of him is, "Oh, you guys can't do stock buybacks and pay your executives because
you hear that, and there's another reason to not write a check." Right.
Well, exactly. And then the thing is, oh, by the way, if we do what you want, in 2.5 years you're out of office, what's the next guy going to do?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Because all this is executive orders. None of it's done through Congress and has any permanence.
I know, it's crazy. Anyway, S&P futures up 21, NASDAQ futures 111. I hope your teams win, and this flu going around is nasty, so stay away from that.
My daughter got hit by it, but I haven't been hit yet. So
everybody I know who's flown in the last 2 weeks has had it.
Well, you know what? Her and her boyfriend just flew back, and there was a kid behind them, one row back, that was hacking up half his lungs, and they're both convinced that that's why they got it.
I have heard from one of the listeners that this flu going around is not passed through air. Is it? It's by
no. It is a really nasty strain, and it's not in the shot. So if you took it, you just got nothing. It was worthless. And the other problem is that generally speaking, virtually every I'm convinced. I lick doorknobs. I haven't gotten a damn thing in the last 4 years since I started making sure that my vitamin D levels were good. People are not doing it. It's cheap. It costs a nickel a day. And by God, I haven't been laid out by one of these things since I started doing that.
Maybe you're so old you already had it.
This one's a fairly novel strain. It's one of the reasons hammering the hell out of people is that it has been around before, but it's been a long time. So
you and I might be there.
Well, no.
As Audrey's 95-year-old dad told her, "Hey, Audrey, if it's around, I've had it between being steerage on ships or some other place in the Army." And Audrey goes, "You know, the last 10 years, he never had the colder flu." He was right.
Well, there you go. Possible. I mean, maybe this is one that hammered me 10 years ago or something.
Anyway, have a good weekend, buddy. SP Futures, I set up 21. Generally, nobody hates the number. We haven't gone down, but we were up a little bit before, and we're up now. Back on Monday, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.